Hi, and welcome to this week's Radio Detective Story Hour for Monday, August 21st, 2006. This jazzy, somewhat noirish theme music is by Fred Steiner and was written for the classic television series Perry Mason. The television series began in 1957, starring and launching the star of Raymond Burr. But before the television run, there was a version on radio. Perry Mason was the creation of former lawyer turned writer Earl Stanley Gardner. Gardner, tired of the long hours working in the legal profession and always felt he wanted to write mystery stories. Born in 1889 in Massachusetts, Gardner had a reputation as a young man of being a bit anti-authority, as his granddaughter called him, doing whatever he pleased. It wasn't unusual for him to get into fights regularly. Ironically, he took a job in the legal firm as a typist. He picked up enough knowledge which allowed him to pass the bar exam in 1911. Several years later, he began trying to write. Sometimes he got published in some of the pulp magazines, but his real break came with a rejection letter from the Black Mask magazine, which accidentally included a step-by-step critique of why the short story was so bad. Using that as a guide, he redid the story, resubmitted it, and it sold. Black Mask was one of the definitive pulp magazines of the time, helping to launch the careers of writers such as Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. Gardner ultimately is credited with writing more stories in Black Mask magazine than most other writers. Often the stories were from one side of the law or the other. One of those stories included a lawyer named Ken Corning. This Gardner character was a sort of template for Perry Mason. The first appearance of Perry Mason was in a novel called The Case of the Velvet Claws in 1933. Though he spent most of his time in the court and had his own private eye in the character of Paul Drake, Mason would still get involved in the crime-solving side. Author Gardner had a group of secretaries who would take his dictated words and transcribe them into the rough beginnings of the novels. As he created Mason, he required that his stories be accurate. His granddaughter, Valerie McKittrick, explains.
He was a stickler for accuracy, so every time he had a murder committed, he bought a gun for each story. For one of the books, there was somebody to die in the bathtub, and he filled the tub up and shot a hole at the angle he wanted to see how far it would go, when the water would run out, and what the angle was. And I don't know who repaired that tub, but grandmother had a fit.
In 1934, the Hollywood studio of Warner Brothers came knocking on his door, and a film was produced in that year called The Case of the Howling Dog, starring Warren Williams as Perry Mason. Six films in all were produced, with Williams in four, and Ricardo Cortez and Donald Woods each splitting the other two. The films continued until 1937, and Perry Mason only continued in novel form for the next few years. In 1943, Procter & Gamble sponsored a new radio series based on the Perry Mason character. The radio Perry Mason was very different from the book and film Mason. Sponsored by Tide, a soap product, it aired in the early afternoon between two other daytime serial dramas. Perry Mason was presented as a 15-minute serial drama and had all the elements of a soap opera. It was on the air five times a week and had all the book's characters, including Mason, Della Street, and Paul Drake. Perry Mason spent more time outside of the courtroom trying to solve crimes and little time defending criminals. Like the other serial dramas, the announcer would begin and end each episode with explanations of the previous episode and the one to come. But for fans of serial dramas and dramatic storylines, the program worked. The stories were good and suspenseful. It remained on the air over CBS until 1955. There were four Perry Masons over the years, with the majority of the episodes that survived starring actor John Larkin. Earl Stanley Gardner had nothing to do with the radio series and reportedly did not like it, though he did get royalties. He continued to write more Perry Mason novels and then in 1957 got involved in a television project of the character. He helped choose the actor to play him on TV, Raymond Burr, and wrote some of the storylines. The television version remained on the air for 10 years and is considered classic TV to this day. I'm going to play two of the episodes from the radio version, though I warn you, the storyline will leave you hanging. But for the taste of another radio detective cum lawyer, here is John Larkin as Perry Mason as heard over CBS in 1948.
Tide gets clothes cleaner than any soap, and then some. Tide gets clothes cleaner than any soap, any other suds, any other washing product known. There's just nothing you can buy that will wash your clothes as clean as Procter & Gamble's Tide. Because Tide, with its amazing new suds, not only leaves clothes free from dirt, but also removes dingy soap film. Yet, with all this remarkable cleaning power, Tide is safe, truly safe, for all your washable colors. What's more, Tide actually brightens gay checks and prints, all those soap-dulled colors. And when it comes to white pillowcases, shirts, and sheets, in hardest water, Tide gets them whiter than any other washing product known. And say, Tide keeps them white, too, week after week. Never turns them yellow. Of all the washing products you have to choose from, only Tide gives you this amazing combination. The cleanest, brightest, whitest wash you ever hung on the line.
Well, today marks the beginning of the trial of the state versus Mary McKean et al. Last night, Elizabeth Wren, Nan Apthorpe, and lawyer B.H. Murtaugh, who has been appointed special prosecutor, held an elaborate celebration in the best nightclub. Yes, they feel very sure of themselves, very sure things are coming their way, especially after Murtaugh received a phone call saying that Perry Mason had been recognized by a newsboy and that the police had a dragnet out for him. Well, dragnet or no dragnet, Mason must go ahead with his own plans if he's to save his client Mary McKean from prison, if he's to save his own good name and freedom. And so this cold gray morning, as we join Paul Drake, Mason, and Della outside a condemned apartment building on the west side of the city, we hear...
This building, Paul?
Yeah, according to Peaches.
What's wrong, Chief?
Well, it's been condemned. It's boarded up. No one's living in it.
No one was living in it when Doc took those pictures, Perry. Peaches was very definite.
Well, this is the place. This is the place.
They did all their work in the living room on the ground floor. That one, right in front of you, with the big bay... Peaches drove me out yesterday. Told me everything. I mean, to the scenery layout. But that's as far as Peaches is going to go for us.
Well, that's a break, anyway.
The hospital flats were set against the rear wall of the living room. Caught the light better that way.
We can't put on much of a show with the light we'll get on a day like this, Paul.
Well, we won't depend on the weather, Della.
No?
Mm-mm. I made arrangements to run a cable to the next-door apartment building. Peaches says that's how it was done in the first place.
Oh, good for you, Paul. That'll cause talk. In the right places, I hope.
Yeah, and it'll give us plenty of light, too. Oh, you want to go into the building now?
Yeah, in a minute.
9:30.
Uh-huh.
Mary goes on trial in half an hour.
Della, let's stick to one thing at a time. Hmm?
Say, what are you doing at that window, Perry?
I just wanted to see if people might notice what was going on from the street.
And?
Yeah, they can, especially if floodlights are used inside.
We'll use plenty.
The whole neighborhood will think we're nuts.
Fine, since everybody thinks movie people are crazy. Anyway, oh, Della, you're going to be the leading lady in this opus.
Me?
Mm-hmm. You resemble Mary enough to fool the casual observer. In fact, I'm hoping we'll hand at least one casual observer a good shock.
Well, if...
Now, you've got a young and handsome operative who can do for Jim Randall, Paul?
Yep. Picked him out already.
Good. Hear that, Della? Young and handsome. Aren't you interested?
Well, no harm mixing business with pleasure, I always say.
Oh, now, baggage. Come on. Cheer up. Paul, the equipment all lined up?
You bet. We've got enough cameras and sound stuff to make people think we're doing another Gone with the Wind. Of course, I won't guarantee everything will work or that my boys will know how to work it. But they've been briefed on how to put up a convincing bluff.
Well, that'll do.
And you won't need to worry about a man in the bunch, even if there is a 750-buck reward out for you.
Well, I'm relieved.
Incidentally, what was that stuff on the radio about you two? Police dragnet. Arrest expected soon and stuff.
No, just routine.
That newsboy business wasn't routine. I think a newsboy did recognize Perry.
Okay, so he recognized me. But before they can close that dragnet tight enough, we'll get this done.
Well, I hope you're right, Perry. The report was unusually positive. And with Mary's trial getting underway, well, they sure didn't lose any time, did they?
Mm-hmm. Somebody brought a little pressure to bear.
Murtaugh. Say, how do you like him getting himself appointed special prosecutor?
Mm, he's a good lawyer. Yeah, he is. I just hope that Jackson can stall him long enough for us to dig out this information. Because if that case gets past the jury selection stage, Jackson won't have any more chance than a snowball on a hot stove.
In other words, we'd better get moving.
Yes, indeed. Now, let's go inside the building before the crew arrives, Paul.
Okay with me. You get in through here.
Hey there, you!
What,
Chief, it's a policeman.
Here goes my license.
Your license? Here go our necks. Oh, Chief.
Shh, take it easy now, Della. Don't lose your head and watch what you say.
You going to bluff it out?
I'm certainly going to make a try. What's the trouble, officer?
I want to know what you folks are doing around this condemned building. There have been two complaints already.
Oh?
About you acting suspicious.
Well, who made these complaints, officer?
That's neither here nor there.
No, I suppose it's not. Well, as it happens, we're planning to take some movies using this building as a background.
Yeah?
May I introduce Mr. Tyler, our producer? My name is Patterson. I'm the director, and this is our star, Miss Stone.
Glad to meet you.
Here are the permits.
Apparently you weren't on this beat last spring when our company was making a picture.
Wait a minute. Sure, I remember. Are you the same outfit?
Well, we're part of it.
And you're going to make another movie?
No, same one. These are retakes. Certain scenes wouldn't pass the censors.
Oh, I get it. Where's your cameras and stuff?
Well, we're waiting for them now. We hope to get set up this afternoon, start shooting at once.
Don't look like you'll have a very good day.
Well, we'll have floodlights and we'll be inside the building. Weather won't stop us. Maybe you remember the people from our company who were here before.
I can't say I do. I had enough on my hands keeping the street clear. I hope you're not going to have a mob of people peeking through the windows.
Well, you know how it is, officer. People are always interested in the movies.
Well, of course, I'll have to report this.
Tyler, you know something? The officer here might be just the man we're looking for.
Us?
Yes. To play the part of the policeman.
Oh. Oh, yeah, sure. The policeman. Say, I bet he could.
Sure.
Who? Me?
Well, it's only a small part. He comes into the scene at the end, says a few lines, and then we cut.
Oh, I never done any acting.
We don't have to. Just be yourself. I'm a great believer in realism.
I guess I could show some of those hams how a real cop acts.
Well, now you're catching on.
Give the wife and kids a boot to see me on the screen, too.
Well, suppose you talk it over with her and let us know, huh?
I'll do that. Well, I guess I better get back on my beat. Oh, by the way.
Yes?
What's the name of this picture?
We're calling it Framed.
Good title.
Yeah.
Well, see you later, Mr. Patterson.
You bet. Well, for a movie star, you're mighty silent, Della. You never opened your mouth.
I couldn't. My teeth were chattering so.
Well, you weren't the only one, Della. I thought we were dead ducks. Especially when I pulled out our permits. Say, if he'd looked at the papers I held out.
Well, the point is he didn't.
We'll have him in our hair from now on.
Yes, but somehow I think he'll neglect to make any reports of it. If he makes a report, he won't be able to act.
Oh.
Well, Paul, what do you think has happened? Where are Peaches and the backgrounds and the equipment? We're going to put on a show. I'd like to start putting on a show.
Meanwhile, back in the courtroom, Liz Wren and Nan Apthorpe make their way through the crowd.
Gee, Liz, will you look at this courtroom? I knew we should have come earlier. We'll never find seats.
Did Mr. Murtaugh tell you? He's saving us a couple.
Oh, well, then let's get down front. Hey, let us through, will you?
No need to be unpleasant, my lovely. Excuse us, please.
Liz, don't sit down. Let's go over and say hello to Mary. It's only polite.
You know, you're really a dreadful person.
Me?
What if you wish? Be careful what you say. Remember all these people.
Don't worry about me. Well, Mary.
Hello, Nan. And Liz. In for a little Roman holiday?
Mary.
Why, how sweet you are, Liz, now.
Now there are people to see and hear you. You poor thing. But then you have only yourself to blame.
How right you are, Liz. Only myself to blame for taking you into my house. Only myself to blame for not having listened to my husband when he warned me you'd do anything to destroy me. Perhaps you've forgotten.
No, we haven't forgotten. We haven't forgotten how you kicked us out either.
Nan, don't. Be charitable. Remember, the poor woman's unbalanced.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
You know what I'd do if I were you, Mary?
I couldn't guess.
I'd plead insanity. I think you would get away with it.
Thank you so much.
Liz wouldn't fight that. She'd be just as satisfied with you in an asylum. Just so long as you can't get near her precious nephew.
I won't answer that.
I don't seem to find Mr. Mason in the courtroom. Do you really expect him to come riding up in the nick of time? You're a bit old to believe in fairy tales.
Mr. Mason will be on hand.
I'm sure no one will be happier to see him than I, except possibly the police.
And when he does get here,
yes?
You'll get what you deserve.
Your face is really beautiful, Mary, if not intelligent. Mr. Mason must be amused when he reads the newspapers, wherever he's hiding.
The police say they expect to catch him any minute now. You're Mr. Mason.
If either of you think you can upset me or destroy my faith in Mr. Mason or hurt me anymore, you're wrong, terribly wrong. So you might as well go back to your seats and enjoy the show. That's what you came for, isn't it?
In just 1 minute, the judge is due to enter, and the trial of Mary McKean is slated to begin. And meanwhile, Perry Mason is... Oh, but won't you join us tomorrow?
Say, are you doing dishes the new way? With Tide? Tide, you know, is Procter & Gamble's new dishwashing miracle. There's never been anything like it. Why, Tide washes dishes cleaner than any soap made. And Tide cuts grease better than any soap made. Seems to make it disappear completely. With Tide, you get no disagreeable scum in the water. No greasy ring round the pan. No cloudy film on dishes and glasses. That's why they rinse and dry sparkling clear, even without wiping. Ah, the minute you use Tide, you'll know you found a completely new product. Because Tide makes a different kind of suds. Richer, faster suds. Suds that are kind to your hands. And lady, in hard water, Tide is a dream come true. Gives oceans of suds even in hardest water. So try Tide in your dishpan today. Honestly, it's so amazing you have to see it to believe it. Yes, Tide gets clothes cleaner than any soap. And if you think that's an amazing promise, just listen to this. Tide gets clothes cleaner than any soap, any other suds, any other washing product known. You see, Procter & Gamble's Tide, with its new miracle suds, not only leaves clothes free from dirt, it removes dingy soap film, too. And lady, Tide does that for all your clothes. Your company linens, your pretty prints, yes, and your grimy work shirts and greasy overalls, too. Yet with all this remarkable cleaning power, Tide is safe, truly safe, for all your washable colors. What's more, Tide actually brightens soap-dulled colors. And white things? Why, in hardest water, Tide gets sheets and pillowcases absolutely gleaming, whiter than any other washing product known. Tide keeps them white, too, week after week. Tide and only Tide gives you all this, the cleanest, brightest, whitest wash you ever hung on the line.
It's only a moment after the close of yesterday's episode. Inside an empty apartment building on the west side, Perry Mason walks up and down, impatiently waiting the arrival of Peaches, the trucker, with a load of movie scenery and equipment. Impatiently because, well, does Mason know that every passing moment increases the chance of his being recognized and arrested. Impatiently because every tick of the clock increases his chance of failure. We're going to join Perry and Alan Paul Drake in just a moment. But first, let's join the crowd in Judge Albert Dallow's courtroom and learn what's to happen to Mary McKean, who, with her lawyer, Perry Mason, has been indicted, charged with kidnapping Mary's own child, David Jr.
In the case of the People versus Mary McKean et al., charged with kidnapping. Ready for the prosecution?
Ready, Your Honor.
Ready for the defense?
No, Your Honor, the defense is not ready.
Perhaps you'd better explain, Mr. Jackson.
Yes, sir. Yes, gladly. Now, as you know, Your Honor, Mrs. McKean was indicted just 2 days ago. Two days is not a sufficient time in which to prepare a case.
Did you ask the presiding judge to give you more time?
I did, Your Honor.
Your request was denied?
Yes, sir.
On what grounds?
The mayor, to please the court. I think I can answer that question.
Yes, Mr. Murtaugh.
I assisted the district attorney's office in presenting the evidence which led to the indictment of Mary McKean, et al.
Yes, Mr. Murtaugh.
Now, the fact is, Your Honor, this is a peculiar case. Some months ago, charges were leveled and proved in court against Mrs. McKean. Charges of such nature as to cause the court to remove Mrs. McKean's child from its mother's care, place it in the custody of the next of kin, Mrs. Elizabeth Wren.
We know this, Mr. Murtaugh.
Yes, of course, Your Honor. Now, in the matter of the present kidnapping charge, there would be no prosecution for kidnap if Mrs. McKean were wrongfully convicted by the first court. I say if, Your Honor. Obviously, she was guilty. Because the Mason office has been working in vain to uncover evidence to disprove those charges. Now, sir, we felt, and the presiding judge felt, that since Mr. Mason has had weeks and weeks in which to prepare, no hardship could be done by waiting to...
I understand the point, Mr. Murtaugh.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jackson?
Yes, sir.
Would you like to answer?
Yes, sir, if I may speak frankly.
Please do.
Well, then... It is quite true that Mr. Mason has been working in Mrs. McKean's behalf.
Mm.
In fact, it was through this work that he was able to assist the Homicide Bureau in capturing that notorious murderer, Doc Keegan.
Oh, wait a minute, wait. In the first place, Keegan hasn't even gone to trial. And in the second, mention of his name in these proceedings is irrelevant and immaterial.
Mr. Murtaugh, no jury has been selected. I am merely trying to decide whether or not to postpone that selection.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Mr. Jackson.
Yes, thank you. Now, sir, it happens my work for Mr. Mason is more a matter of research than collaboration. Well, whatever evidence he may have collected, well, whatever plans he may have made for the defense of Mrs. McKean are unknown to me. Therefore, in preparing my case, I must start from the beginning without the benefit of any facts which may have come into his possession before his disappearance.
You mean before he ran out on his client rather than face arrest?
If you please, Mr. Murtaugh.
Your Honor, Perry Mason is just as much on trial as Mary McKean. More so. And I submit that neither he nor anyone connected with his office is entitled to the smallest bit of consideration. Mr. Jackson, for whom I have the utmost respect, has admitted Perry Mason had had ample time in which to prove the court proceedings against Mary McKean irregular, if they had been irregular. He, together with his secretary and his client, Mary McKean, have been indicted for kidnapping a child which they could not obtain by legal means, hoping against hope that
please
they
could... Please bear in mind, Mr. Murtaugh, you are speaking of an indictment. There has been no conviction.
Oh, yes, I stand corrected, Your Honor. However, Mr. Mason and his secretary have chosen to disappear. The fact that Mr. Jackson happens to be unprepared is unfortunate, but we feel it has no bearing. If Mr. Mason alone knows the facts, let him come into this court and defend his client as an honorable attorney should do. Meanwhile, Mr. Jackson wishes to plead his client guilty,
I certainly do not.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is we are not here either to prove or disprove the charges relative to Mrs. McKean's being a fit mother for her own child. That case was settled months ago.
Your Honor, Mr. Murtaugh himself has said that if those charges could be disproven, the case for the prosecution would collapse.
If... Mr. Jackson, if...
He very well knows that it is only by showing the nature of the woman into whose custody a small child was given, the fact that Elizabeth Wren gave that baby into the keeping of a man now in jail or awaiting trial for murder...
Mr. Jackson, please. This sounds to me more like a summation at the end of a case than a discussion as to whether or not a trial should be allowed to proceed.
Your Honor, it's all very clear that Mr. Jackson is doing his best to stall.
For what purpose, Mr. Murtaugh?
Why, to give Perry Mason the last chance to get off that tightrope he's walking.
Mr. Mason doesn't need my help, Mr.
Oh.
Murtaugh. He's perfectly capable of taking care of himself.
Then if that is the case,
gentlemen,
he can come into this court.
Must I remind you again, this trial has not started.
I apologize, but, Your Honor, if Mr. Murtaugh is so certain this woman is guilty, so certain that Perry Mason is walking a tightrope, then why is he afraid to give us a little time?
Hmm?
Why is he so afraid of what Mr. Mason might do? And on a tightrope.
He could well use it to hang himself.
That's enough, Mr. Jackson. We will grant a continuance of this trial. Next week, I shall expect you in court and ready to begin, prepared or not.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I hope that's satisfactory to the prosecution, Mr. Murtaugh. Mm. Or are you bothered Mr. Mason will come down from his tightrope before next week?
I wish he would. I wish he would.
Very well, then. Court is adjourned.
Turn off the portal, will you, Dylan?
Yes, sure. Watching out of that window isn't going to bring Peaches any sooner.
No?
Or Paul, either. Well, at least you have to hand it to Jackson. He used his head. He got a continuance until next week.
Oh.
So we have that much more time.
It's a fat lot of good it'll do if Peaches doesn't show up with the equipment.
Perry, he said
he'd... he'd be here before 11. With the backgrounds, the camera, and the men Paul trained to use them. It's 11:30 now. No trucks, no
men. Maybe he
no...
was delayed at the warehouse. Maybe he had trouble getting that much movie equipment together.
It was all arranged, Ella. All Peaches had to do was pick it up. Okay, I'll relax. We're really walking a tightrope this time,
I know. Chief.
Oh.
Have you thought about what may happen if Paul doesn't get back?
What?
Well, he's the one who studied the movie technique.
Well, if Paul doesn't get back, I'll take care of it.
You?
It just means a little juggling act on the tightrope. Fond as I am of Paul, he's not the one I want to see. It's Peaches. Peaches and all that scenery and equipment and those operatives who've been trained to make like a movie company.
Hey.
Who's that?
I don't know.
Hey, Mr. Patterson.
It's the cop on the beat.
Mr. Patterson, she said it was okay.
Patterson, that's what you said your name was, Chief.
Yeah, that's right. Who said it was okay?
The little woman. She thought it was grand, me getting a chance to act the part of a cop in a movie.
Oh, yes, yes, fine. Glad to have you.
Only I still got to call in every hour, so I wonder if you could shoot my scene first, Mr. Hey, what's going on here?
Nothing. Why?
I've been looking through this apartment while we've been talking. There's no scenery, no cameras, no crew.
How right you are, officer.
When I was here on my last round, you said the cameras, scenery, and crews would be here any minute.
Well, they'll still be here any minute.
And now, an hour later, here's you two in this vacant apartment and no equipment but a portable radio. Maybe there's something that needs explaining. Maybe I'd better check.
Hey, everybody, where are you?
Now, who's that?
Peaches?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, well, where is everybody?
They're here. Our equipment. Look out the window, officer. You'll see all the trucks and the cameras.
Yeah, it is.
Peaches, bring everything into this apartment, huh?
Okay, okay.
I hope you won't hold it against me, Mr. Patterson.
Hold what?
Oh, me talking the way I did.
Oh, no, it's quite all right. Forget it.
And I can still play a part in your movie?
Sure, sure, sure. After we've set up. Why don't you come and ask me after you've made your next round?
So far, so good. The scenery is there, and Mason is raring to go. But as Lawyer Murtaugh pointed out, and as Perry Mason so earnestly feels, he's walking a tightrope, ready to fall or get pushed off at any minute. But will that happen? Well, join us tomorrow, won't you?
Today there are more washing products on the market than ever before. So remember this. Tide is different from all the others. Yes, Procter & Gamble's amazing Tide gets clothes cleaner than any soap, any other suds, any other washing product known. Because Tide not only leaves clothes free from dirt, it also removes dingy soap film. Yet with all this unusual cleaning power, Tide is safe, truly safe, for all your washable colors. What's more, Tide actually brightens soap-dulled colors. And in hardest water, Tide gets linens and shirts whiter than any other washing product known. And Tide turns out oceans of suds, even in hardest water. They're different-looking, different-feeling suds. And that's only natural, because Tide itself is different. Tide is the only washing product known that gives you this amazing combination. The cleanest, brightest, whitest wash you ever hung on the line.
Thanks for downloading this week's podcast of the Radio Detective Story Hour. If you'd like to make any comments, you can go to the website at detective.libsyn.com, or you can just send an email to me at otrpodcast@gmail.com.